Game on 2FM.
With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green, for getting us through the week, and enjoy your holidays, Jenny. It's Friday, the 27th of August, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Ronaldo's return. Alan Cawley is with me, and I'm not sure I can get him to calm down.
And Ronaldo wins the battle of wits, and Manchester United are one goal nearer.
Neatly worked. Clipped it towards Ronaldo!
Manchester United strike first, and guess who?
Definitely music to your ears, Alan.
Even the buzz at Atbury, even just hearing the old commentary when he used to bang in goals.
In Gaelic football, Colm Kavanagh put it out the Tyrone view on last night's show. Well, tonight it's Kerry's turn as Darren O'Sullivan previews tomorrow's semi-final.
Still David Clifford, still David. Here comes the shot, here comes the goal. Brilliant. He is the captain. He is 21 since last Wednesday. And as we mentioned before, class is always there once you have it. And he's got it.
Plus, we've Ciara Griffin on Rugby Interpros, Jane Mangan on racing, and all the latest from the Paralympics.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch and tell us what you think of Ronaldo returning, please do so on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM. So for anyone that has been living under a rock for the afternoon, Manchester United have tweeted, "Welcome home, Cristiano." And it is definitely going to be some welcome home party, Alan Cawley.
It's absolutely unbelievable news, Marie. You have the 14-year-old Alan Cawley in the studio with you tonight. It's unreal, honestly. This is taking me back to the days when I was a kid and a fan. And the fact that it's come out of nowhere and out of the blue, it's absolutely incredible, because all the talk was that he may be going to City, and United were never really in the mix for my, as far as I knew or as far as I was thinking. And for this to blow up the way it has today, and then obviously the announcement to come so quickly, only a few minutes ago, really, it's absolutely incredible news, Marie. And I've always been critical, obviously, since Ferguson has left, and them not signing the best players or going after the best players, and obviously the managers have struggled as well. And you know, I'm not a fan of Solskjaer, but bringing this fella back is just the boost and the lift it gives everyone else, and it's absolutely incredible news.
It has been some day, all right. I think this morning the debate was whether or not he'd fit in better at Manchester City or PSG, and that just was turned on its head. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gave a press conference and he kind of hinted that he was confident that he would be able to get the deal done. So a couple of players had tweeted as well, saying, ex-players, I mean Manchester United ex-players, saying that they didn't think he was going to go to Manchester City, and all of a sudden the conversation started to focus on whether or not he would be going back to Manchester United. Well, to talk us through how this deal was done and how it unfolded, Fergal Brennan, football journalist, is with us. Fergal, Alan Cawley was surprised. Everyone on Twitter was surprised. The lads that were burning the Ronaldo United shirts earlier this morning were surprised. Were the journalists surprised, or was this expected in any way?
To an extent, yeah. I think when any move like this happens, obviously there is an element of surprise, particularly because it's all been turned around so quickly. I would say that noise about this probably started late last night. I think that there's been a number of key little pieces of the jigsaw that's fallen into place in the last 24 hours that's got this move over the line. Around late evening yesterday, they did start to see some holes in City's bid for him. I don't think personally from the get-go he was massively convinced by going to City. I think just the prospect of playing in that team and having a chance of winning the Premier League title, and obviously the enormous wage packet that would come with it, they were the motivating factors of a move to City. But he himself, his representatives, and everyone surrounding it, it never really seemed to fit. Pep Guardiola was quite coy on it. We know that it would have been a plan B to obviously Harry Kane coming in. And it would have been a very quick turnaround, a very quick deal. And Guardiola doesn't really deal in that sort of a situation. So United essentially smelt blood. They've seen a gap in the market. Ronaldo's been very clear about this in the last week or so in saying that he wants to leave Juventus. He doesn't want to stay and playing Turin this season. So United have seized that opportunity. What's happened since this morning is some key moves from some key players. Sir Alex Ferguson, we now know, reached out to Ronaldo. There was a phone call with him this morning. He holds him in such high regard. There's enormous respect between the two of them. And Ferguson obviously brought Ronaldo to United first time round all them years ago in 2003 from Sporting Lisbon when he was just a kid. And those things, those types of criteria that can be moved into place is what's got this deal done for United as a project. The whole return to Old Trafford, his enormous connection with the fans. I know, obviously, as you said, rewind 24 hours and there's United fans screaming if he was potentially going to join City. But there's a huge, long-standing emotional connection between the fans and him. There's still question marks over, you know, his commitment and exactly what his full motivations for going back to Manchester United are. But in terms of the deal, yeah, it has been a bit of a quick turnaround. But I think essentially it comes from United sensing that it wasn't as wrapped up with City as it appeared maybe 24 hours ago. And they do have some big guns they can wheel out in these situations. Sir Alex Ferguson, former players, we know that Rio Ferdinand has been involved and has spoken directly to Ronaldo. And I think that's all it's taken, just a convincing that they could match the wage package that City were willing to put forward. The fact that he'll now form such a massive part of United pushing to go for the Premier League title and a chance to probably wrap up his career in European football back where it started for him as a major player at United.
Alan, look, it is fairy tale stuff if you're a Manchester United fan, especially one that lived through the years when he was doing unbelievable things in the red jersey. But do you think that they've bought him for the right reasons? Are they buying him to make the team better, to go out and try and win the Premier League? Or is it a case that they're trying to stop Manchester City from getting him?
Yeah, definitely there's a case of that, Marie, because if you think about it in terms of how quickly the deal was done, as Fergal has outlined here, it wasn't like this was planned by any means going back through the whole pre-season or anything like that. I've been critical of the fact that they haven't signed a centre forward, and I also felt they needed to sign a centre midfielder. But this, as Fergal said, there was a gap there and they've pounced all over it purely because of the fact that it is Ronaldo. And in some ways, you can't blame them really in some ways, Marie, because of that long-standing relationship, as Fergal also said. And then the fact that he's so good. Like, even though the stage that he's at, I know there's a text coming in there to ask the question in terms of his age. We all know, but the condition and the way he looks after himself and the longevity he's had in the game so far, he's not every bit as good as what he was obviously the first time round, but he'll still score goals, and in that team he'll score goals as well. So when I suppose you weigh it all up, and then I suppose the romance around it as well, Marie, and the big news, and especially I think with Solskjaer as well, because we have been critical of him, it'll probably take a lot of the flack from him as well, in the fact that he's getting a superstar player that everybody was calling out for. Whether it'll make them go on and win the league, I'm not so sure, but I definitely think it brings them closer to Chelsea, Man City, having Ronaldo on the team.
And Fergal, just in terms of what he's capable of doing now, or, you know, he is 36 now at this stage, so he's not exactly the player he was 10 years ago. But there is a school of thought out there that when he joins a team, he doesn't make them better, that he's not going to improve the players around him, he's not going to help in the development of them, he's not going to help them win games, that he's only out there for himself. And I suppose Juventus is probably a good case study for that. Where does he fit in with this Manchester United team?
I think when you look at the type of player that he's evolved into in his last couple of years with Real Madrid, and obviously now at Juventus in the last three seasons, and Alan makes the point in terms of his record, it hasn't really dipped dramatically. Still averages in and around 30 league goals a season, in and around 35 in all competitions. So you'd expect him to play through the middle. His days of playing out wide on the right and flying down the wing and burning past fullbacks are long behind him, although as a 36-year-old, he's still in good nick and he's still pretty quick. But United, we know, given the players that they have, they are very creative. They've got lots of pace in wide areas. Greenwood, Rashford when he gets back fit, Dan James, Jadon Sancho, who kind of has almost been pushed to the side of the conversation. What they do lack is someone right in the box that when a ball falls to them, when the chance falls, they can just bury it. They found a stopgap solution with Edinson Cavani at the back end of last season. Obviously, he's now extended his contract, and the confidence before all this talk of Ronaldo came up was that they could squeeze another season out of Cavani and then look to address the situation next summer. But I just think all the cards have fallen. They've seen this opportunity to go for Ronaldo. Yes, it is going to be an enormous wage package to bring him in. But United know that in the big games in the Premier League, City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham, etc., and then in the Champions League, they couldn't count on someone that if they're only going to get two or three chances inside the box a game to just bury them. Ronaldo offers that level of guarantee, or certainly based on his numbers over the last 2-3 years and obviously going way back into his time at Real Madrid. That's where they'll want him. They'll want him through the middle, flanked by probably Greenwood and Sancho until Rashford comes back from his surgery. And when you build the rest of the structure of the side around him, Bruno Fernandes, Paul Pogba, it's frightening for the rest of the Premier League because he brings such an assurance and such a confidence. There's quite a few young or certainly players in the formative years of their career in Sancho and Greenwood, Rashford. The confidence that he brings, having him stood in the tunnel at Old Trafford, when you line up against an opposition. When you're kind of attacking and you look into the box and Cristiano Ronaldo is standing there, it drives these players up another level or two. And Ronaldo will drag these players along with him, and everybody within that team will benefit from Ronaldo. It's not a long-term thing. He is 36. He's not going to be there on a long-term contract. But if the short-term gains can get United where they want to be, this could be a hell of a signing.
It'll be interesting to see as well if he drags Ole Gunnar Solskjaer along with him as well, because he seems to need something big just even to keep the fans on side. He was asked a little bit earlier about Ronaldo, and this was before it was confirmed that he was coming to Manchester United.
Cristiano has been a legend of this club. He is a legend of this club. He's the greatest player of all time, if you ask me. I was fortunate enough to play with him. I coached him when I got my job. He almost retired me because that Wolverhampton game when I got injured, he kept switching sides. But such a tremendous human being as well. So let's see what happens with Cristiano. Everyone who's played with him, have a soft spot for him.
Alan, I know you tweeted a little bit earlier to bring Alex Ferguson back as well. But look, is he going to be the spark that Solskjaer needs now for the season?
Well, that tweet was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I would bring him back if we couldn't, to be honest with you. But,
I know you would.
Absolutely, yeah. And like the Solskjaer, don't get me wrong, I know people will probably tell he's a great guy, he's speaking like a little fan there, Marie. Like, you don't want that from the manager. And that's the thing. Ronaldo's coming in as a superstar status, as we all know. And he probably would overshadow 85, 90% of the managers out there. But would he overshadow, would Klopp be talking like that about him or Guardiola? It's almost like a little fan talking. So I'm not mad on them comments. I know people would say I'm very hard on Solskjaer, but I'm not mad on them comments at all. And in terms of him managing him, he won't be managing him. Ronaldo will be managing himself. And I think when you look at, obviously, the situation, him coming in, the career that he's had, Fergal's right to point out that's exactly where he'd play in terms of that number nine role. Where they're crying out for, there is a gap. I don't think Solskjaer would be giving him any information in terms of what he'd want from him. But to be fair to Ronaldo, in terms of the standards that he set and how he carries himself, he'll be setting standards for himself. And you asked the question about, will he improve other lads around him? He might not improve them technically, or the team technically, in terms of how they're going to play, but he'll certainly improve them standards wise in the younger lads looking up to him and what it takes to get to the level that he's got to. Like, you even hear, like, I won't call them superstar players, but you even hear world class players like Rio Ferdinand when they speak about him now, or Roy Keane, who for me was the best of them all. Even Roy Keane put out an Instagram post. You must be doing something right if he's putting out an Instagram post about you. But just in terms of the standards that he sets, Marie, and I think you look at the likes of Rashford, Greenwood, and some of those young lads that are there at the moment, and they all seem to be good lads, but just to have Ronaldo in that dressing room, that'll bring them on no end.
Fergal, has Alan been a little bit harsh there on Solskjaer? Because, like, that's the reality of his experience with him. And it is probably a reflection as well about how early Solskjaer is in his management career. He did play with him. He did coach him. You know, he's not that far out of the game as a player himself.
No, I think it's a direct reflection of Solskjaer's relationship to Ronaldo because of his age and obviously the time that he was at United. But I would agree with the bulk of what Alan's saying. And I think the key point in all this is he won't manage Ronaldo, and this is going to be probably what makes or breaks this season with Ronaldo back at United, because the last manager that had a, not necessarily a hold on Ronaldo, but an ability to manage him, an ability to call the shots when it came to him, was Zinedine Zidane at Juventus. Even under Pirlo, he had pretty much a free rein as long as he was still performing. That is again going to be the situation and the conversations that are had at United. Solskjaer's job is to manage the situation around him. Cristiano Ronaldo is by far and away the biggest, best, most high-profile player Solskjaer has ever managed. And he knows that. And he knows all of the baggage that comes with those types of decisions that get made by the club. Solskjaer's job now is to ensure that he remains motivated, that he keeps banging in the goals and he keeps hitting the standards that he has done. What Solskjaer has to do is ensure that it doesn't completely become about Ronaldo. He has to create what's going to be a really, really fine balancing act. Solskjaer has had lots of questions thrown at him during his time at United. But now what he has to do is he has to create a balance whereby Ronaldo's ego, Ronaldo's status is used to the best effect, that he's scoring goals and he's driving United on. If there's even the hint of a little bit of an upset within the camp or egos or clashes, he's got to work so hard, man management, communication, to keep that balance, because Ronaldo has the ability to turn it both directions. He can win you every competition that you're in. he can also cause a civil war if it goes in the opposite direction, because he is that type of character. He will push for things. He will try to drive the team on. But Solskjaer's got a real job on his hands to keep everything balanced and keep it steady, because United are in a bit of a make or break situation, and so is Solskjaer. If Solskjaer ends this season with no trophies, I think he's gone. I think United have essentially said, listen, we're not 100% convinced by you in terms of long term at this club. We're going to give you this money. We're going to give you these opportunities. You're in last chance saloon now. So Solskjaer is under a massive amount of pressure. He's spinning a lot of plates. If it goes well, I think he solidifies himself in the medium term. If it doesn't, there's going to be big questions of him down the line.
For all those reasons that Fergal outlined, and I agree with them all, Marie, I just wonder did Guardiola even want him? I don't think he did at all. And that's why I don't think that deal ever went through, to be honest with you. Because I don't think Guardiola would indulge Ronaldo the way people, the way Solskjaer will, or the way other managers, weaker managers will. And that's why I think if Guardiola was looking at that, and you asked the question about fitting into that team, I don't know, would he fit into that team? Cause for all the things that you said about him being an individual and selfish, and for all those things that have got him to where he is and the goals that he's got. But I just look at Guardiola managing the group of players that he is, and he manages them no matter who they are. Like, that would take serious management, trying to control the ego of Ronaldo. And I don't know if Guardiola would go down that road. If you think back when he was at Barcelona with Ibrahimovic, and there was carnage because he just couldn't put up with the ego and couldn't handle the ego of Ibrahimovic. Now, I'm not saying Ronaldo is like that, but he's not probably not far off it in terms of, he might not be as vocal as Ibrahimovic about it, but I'd say inwardly he probably is, which can be a good thing to get to where he got to.
Yeah, when you think about it, Al, all the stories that you've heard from former players and teammates about Ronaldo and how he does everything, every single thing that he does is to make sure that he can keep performing at the top level, whether it's sleeping in a room at a certain temperature, having a certain type of mattress, having whatever food that he wants. And as you said then, like, trying to manage that and get him to conform to whatever ideologies a manager have is going to be difficult. And Fergal, Jay tweeted in and said, if nothing else, having the likes of him there with Greenwood and Rashford and every other young player, getting to train and play with him for 2 years is enough. But I don't know if that is enough, Fergal, because I don't know if he would give enough of himself to young players coming through now, especially when he's coming to the end of his career and trying to get that longevity that he has been chasing for so long will be priority. Is he going to even care about those young players and doing anything for them?
Not necessarily, no, because I think post-30, we've seen a different version of Cristiano Ronaldo. I do think by just sheer ripple effect, players around him will benefit from him just by virtue of being in the same part of the pitch as him on the training ground. He will help in certain areas. But Ronaldo, it's a very difficult one to kind of analyse. Ronaldo is all about himself. But within that, because he is such a phenomenal performer, the team that he's in benefits. But he's not someone necessarily to galvanise on the pitch. That's why he's very rarely captain. I know he's Portugal captain, but at club level, he's very, very rarely taken the armband at any team that he's ever been at, because his focus is me, and me within the team, but me first. You guys will all benefit from having me in this team because of the goals that I score and the sheer ability that I have. But if you benefit from me being around you on your personal level or your own career development, great, but that's not my focus. My focus is me. And that will be the situation at United. And that goes back to what I said before, this idea of a balancing act. Solskjaer is going to have to make sure that that doesn't upset the equilibrium of what he has got going at United. And one thing that I would also say, which you hope this goes well, because as you say, from you look at this and you speak to United fans, they're obviously very, very excited. It's telling that the phone call was Sir Alex Ferguson and not Solskjaer. It was telling that Ferguson was the one he listened to, and Ronaldo was the one that Ferguson listened to in terms of these moves. We know that the club and the hierarchy generally decide these things anyway, but that is a real, real key point on this in terms of where Ronaldo's respect lies, where his ability to kind of doff to other people. That's exactly where this is. If right from the get-go, there's even the potential that he doesn't fully respect Solskjaer, then there's a problem. I'm not saying that necessarily that is the case, but if there is even a little flicker of that, Solskjaer's got a job on his hand to make sure that that is canned and United develop.
And to be fair, Marie, like, I know I'm not being negative, but I think this is brilliant. I actually, you saw how excited I was even coming in, just at the prospect of him being around and back. And even in the league in general, I think this is unbelievable news. It really is. I was coming over here in the car thinking, this is amazing. It really is. And we're just outlining, I suppose, all the factors around it in terms of just what it will take, maybe from Solskjaer's point of view, United managing him, having around the players. But if you were to ask me just in a one-off line, is this good or bad? This is 100% good for Man United.
Well, you'd hope that, for Ollie's sake anyway, that it isn't part of the reason that he does end up losing his job. Because if it doesn't go well, as you said, like, I think you used the word carnage. You could imagine that it could end up being carnage.
Well, I hope he does lose his job.
We are getting a lot of tweets in as well, Alan, to you about Ole and just how harsh that you are on him. And one tweeter says, look, just let him get on with it. He's better than Arteta. United don't need the upheaval of another manager as well. And you would think that. But Alan, when you look at the season, and you said yourself, you don't expect Manchester United to win the Premier League this year. Well, then what's success for them if they don't go and win the Premier League?
Well, there you go. So, and that's the one thing that the fans, I suppose, have been crying out for years. Now, it's not just Solskjaer that has failed. Obviously, there's been a lot of managers since Alex Ferguson that have failed as well in terms of that regard. But just trying to get them onto 11 playing field, even with Chelsea and Man City, I think is difficult at the moment. Never mind winning the league. It just goes back to, I have nothing against Solskjaer, as you know. Like, brilliant player. All the stuff we've already said about him, but just in terms of at that level to manage that club to try and overtake Man City and
Chelsea.
Where
did he finish last year?
Second.
Well, like,
just no good.
Yeah, well, you just said they're not going to win, and yet at the same
time, so I wouldn't have him there, even finishing second.
So you think
what's the point
in
having
that they're not going to go one step further
is him. Yeah.
And that's it. The 100%. Players are good enough, the team's good enough.
100%.
The owners have been supporting him, all the rest, and it's all down to him that you haven't got that one step closer to the top.
Yeah, I just think if you had a manager of the level of what we're talking about, Guardiola and Klopp and all the others around Europe, or Conte or whoever you want, whatever name you want to throw out, he's not at that level. He's not at that level, and he never will be at that level.
Fergal?
I'd kind of find myself somewhere in the middle. I think prior to this summer, United didn't have the players, so Solskjaer did have a little bit of wiggle room. Now he does. He has Varane, Sancho, and now Ronaldo, so there's no excuses. Now, I agree with Alan to the extent that, no, he's probably never going to be in their box, but now there's no excuses. He's got all these players. He was second last season. If he wants to prove that he's that good, this needs to end in silverware at the end of the campaign.
But he was second when you think how poor Liverpool were, how poor Chelsea were, and all that. So a little bit of that is false, in my eyes as well. We'll see this year now.
Chelsea won the Champions League.
No, but I mean, I know they won the Champions League, but I mean, the start that they had, that was only when Tuchel came in. So when you look at in terms of the teams that they were competing against last year, and obviously finishing second to City, the gaps there is a little bit, the gap that they finished up on, I think it's still a little bit false. And when you look at the four that are in contention this year, this is a good test to see exactly where they're at this year.
So where do you think they're going to finish, Al?
They won't win the league.
Where are they going to finish?
Third or fourth.
So you said Chelsea are going to win the league. So that means you think Man City are going to be second, Liverpool third?
Or United third or fourth, and that's not good enough.
Right, okay. Well, we are getting a huge reaction to Alan Cawley's dislike for Ole.
That's the wrong word now.
Dissatisfaction with the standard of manager at Manchester United. Fergal, while we have Alan here on the ropes, we might as well put a tune as well.
about
Harry Kane and his statement earlier. Actually, it was only about a week ago when you said that Harry Kane is most definitely, well, actually 100% sure he was going to end up at Manchester City. That feels like it happened ages ago, but he is staying at Spurs.
Yeah, I can't get them all right, Marie, but I'll hold my hands up. I'm actually, whatever about being shocked about Ronaldo coming back, I was even more shocked that Kane didn't go to Man City, because for all along, once Kane came out and said, obviously at the end of the season, that he was leaving, I thought the deal was done. Obviously we had the Euros, and I felt, well, he'll get on with the Euros and afterwards it'll be done then. But I think it just goes to show how shrewd and how hard-nosed an operator Daniel Levy is, because he wasn't giving in whatsoever, and you'd have to admire him for that. But, and in some ways I'm kind of glad, Marie, because you look at the players now and all, like when we were growing up, and the superstar players, and you look at them now and you think, like, once they get to a certain point that they're going to go to a superstar team, whereas there was always some romance in the fact that Shearer went to Newcastle rather than going to the superstar team, even though he might regret that. You look at them now and it's just a case of they can go to three or four teams with all the money, and that romance has kind of gone out of it a little bit. So the fact that Kane loves Spurs and they're his team and all that kind of stuff, even though I'd love to see him at one of the super teams, I think there's a little bit of romanticism in the fact that he's stayed there. Now, whether he is going to stay there, I think there could be another maybe gentleman's agreement that's gone on in the background to say, look, I'll give you one more year possibly. Or the fact that he said, I'm staying this summer, was quite telling that line. He wasn't saying, I'm committing my future to Spurs and I'll see out the 3 years that I've left on my contract. But I was shocked, yeah, and yeah, I got it wrong.
You really did. And Fergal, he's back scoring for Spurs as well. 2 goals last night, and you'd expect now against Watford at the weekend that he's going to put in another big performance.
Yeah, I think I said the other night when Kane's retention was confirmed and Alan was unfortunately proved wrong that this is the type of
Fergal, hold on a minute now, not you as well.
Kane is this type of character. We knew all along that if it didn't come through, if Levy stuck by the contract and stuck by his stance on keeping Kane at Tottenham and Kane did stay, that Kane will just revert to type. He is that type of character. He's very, very, very professional. He's very straightforward in the way that he operates. And will it have an enormous effect on where Tottenham finished this season? I don't necessarily think so. I think they've improved in little pockets of the squad this season. Nuno Santo, there's still big questions about him as a coach, whether he will have enough to drive them back into the Champions League conversation and potentially further on. I'm fully prepared for 12 months' time, this same conversation to come up for Harry Kane, possibly even in January. Although if Levy's unlikely to sell in the summer, he definitely won't entertain that in the middle of the campaign. So Harry Kane is the type of character that he's very, very, very loyal when he's forced to be loyal, I should say, because he clearly wants to leave. But now that it's all tied up, now that he is staying, he will be loyal to Tottenham this season. He'll still be a massive player for them. He'll still score lots of goals. He'll still be their key man in the big games. But ultimately, this has just been shoved on the back burner for another 12 months. This will get revisited and we'll have probably an identical situation next summer. The only difference then will be City will have a stronger hand because he'll have a year less on his contract at Spurs.
And Alan, just before we finish up, I think after the weekend as well, we'll probably have a very good picture of where exactly the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea are when they face off tomorrow evening. Just how do you think that Liverpool are going to cope with Lukaku now that he's back and all guns blazing?
A lot better than what Arsenal coped with him anyway, Simri, to be honest. And it'll be interesting to see, obviously, Van Dijk and how he deals with him, because we all regard Van Dijk as probably the best centre-half in the world. So I'm really looking forward to that battle. It's a pity Van Dijk probably hasn't got another few weeks under his belt, but I do think he's looking a lot like himself, and it should be a brilliant game. I'm really looking forward to it. As you know, I tipped Chelsea. They're looking very strong. Tuchel was named the UEFA manager during the week there as well of the year. So there's a lot going right for Chelsea at the moment. The squad that they've built up over the past kind of 2-3 years as well, you look at the quality that they have and the strength and depth also, which I think they do have the edge on Liverpool. But when it comes down to the best 11s, the two 11s, I think Liverpool are every bit as good as Chelsea. And I've already said numerous times that when Liverpool get their best 11 on the pitch, they're a match for anybody. So I think it'll be a close game tomorrow, and it wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool even overturn Chelsea, but I'm really looking forward to that, as you say, particular Lukaku and Van Dijk.
Okay, well, it is an exciting start to the season, I have to say.
And it will be, I think the league as well, as we said, it will be a lot more competitive, and that's good as well. We want to see that, Marie.
Big time. Okay, look, thanks so much, Alan. Stay with us, Fergal. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will chat to you next week. We're going to take a very quick break, and then it is Gaelic football with Darren O'Sullivan.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We are going to turn our attention to Gaelic football. Darren O'Sullivan is with us on the line, former Kerry footballer. Well, Darren, before we turn our attention to Gaelic football, just as a lifelong Manchester United fan, are you as excited and full of hope as Alan Cawley for the return of Ronaldo?
Yeah, I'm like a small boy here. I can't get off the phone. I swear to God, it's kind of embarrassing. I'd forgotten all about the Kerry game. Yeah, it's just very kind of stuff for sure. Like that, we'll see at the end of the year. But I just think United probably needed something like this, someone to bring the buzz back. So yeah, looking forward to them bringing him out in Old Trafford. Like, I'd love to be in the crowd. Like when they brought out Varane, the atmosphere was unreal. But I can just imagine when Ronaldo walks out, the place is going to erupt.
Yeah, it really will. And just in terms of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, are you of the same school of thought as Alan Cawley or as many of our texters who are sending in support for poor Ole?
I'm not as aggressive as Alan in all the notes there.
Hold on a minute, Darren. I'm not aggressive at all. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Look, it is one of the ones. I don't think he has the squad up to now. I still think we're lacking a defensive midfielder. But like that, they have a quality squad now. They have to be. Look, they were second last year, but it wasn't a good second. You know, it was tailing off. I think Alan's right. Liverpool were poor last year in the league. Did a bad start under Lampard. So this is going to be the real test. And realistically, if they don't push the title closer. And if they don't win silverware, I do think he'll be gone.
Yeah, it does seem to be the case, all right. A lot of people agreeing with both you guys. And actually, do you know what? It probably does add to the pressure, really, when you throw Ronaldo into the mix that's going to be piled on him as the season progresses. Right, we do have the small matter that of the All-Ireland semi-final between Kerry and Tyrone, one that we have been waiting quite a while for. And do you know what, Darren, when you think about it, it's been so long since we've seen either team, really, when you consider just everything that's happened in between. It's hard to even nearly recall what you're going to expect from the two sides, because there's been so much sport in between. But just when, I guess, look, let's just focus first of all on that Kerry attack, because we've seen what they are capable of so often, and we've seen the damage that they've done to Tyrone in the past. Do you think that Tyrone are going to have learned enough to be able to shut them down?
Yeah, look, I like watching the league game there. Like, you can't really take too much from it. Kerry were very good on the day, but like that, they got three quick fire goals. They killed off the game, and for whatever reason that day, Tyrone didn't look interested. I think they had their eyes firmly fixed on the Ulster Championship. They're trying to fine tune a couple of things in the league. I think we've seen a different Tyrone since then, and I can't see them. But I can't see them playing the same way they have in the Ulster Championship. Like that, the Kerry forward line is very strong. I think if you go for a shootout, I think Kerry win that 99 times out of 100. But having said that, I'd be a bit worried from Kerry. Look, it's the usual team, Kerry defensively, but the Tyrone forward line are quite big physical men, and if you look around the Kerry defence, we don't have that physicality really in the back. So I'm a bit more worried about the Tyrone attack against our defence.
I saw those Gavin Devlin comments that were in the Team Talk magazine. A lot of people have been referring to them, that the reason that Kerry are putting 15 behind the ball at times is because they don't trust their defenders. Look, that has got quite a lot of focus. And, you know, we talk about pressure being piled on, but when things like that do get into the media, it does maybe, I suppose, change the narrative a little bit. Would you subscribe to any of what Gavin Devlin said?
Not really, to be honest. I think, look, if you watch any game, that's the way the game is. No, players funnel back. It isn't like Kerry get turned over and all 15 just tear back the field and get into a defensive structure. It isn't. You funnel back, and that's the way they've always in the half forward line when the ball is turned up. You funnel back because it saves you sprinting back 50 or 60 yards. So you'd be dragging away back and trying to condense the field. That's the way the game is. The best team over the last number of years has been Dublin at doing that, where they make it difficult to break down and then they counterattack, and that's what made them so good. They were as good in defence as they were in attack, and I think Kerry have learned that that's what you have to do. I think his comments were about making headlines and taking the focus away from Tyrone, so in that respect he's done quite well. For me, the biggest storyline will be how Tyrone approach it. I, for one, wouldn't be thinking that for the last 5 weeks they've been laid up in their beds, coughing and spluttering. I think they'll have a plan in place for Kerry, and they will have worked on it an awful lot over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's going to be a huge amount of interest in it, just to see, I guess, probably because of the postponements, and there was a lot of question marks and a lot of people wondering how bad the COVID situation was. I don't think we're ever going to know, but you have to take them at their word that they did have a lot of players who were out sick and they needed that bit of extra time. I think maybe if the result goes one way, the Tyrone's way, rather than Kerry's, there might be a little bit more focus on it again. But there's no doubt that when COVID does sit in, that it can have long-term effects on players, and you just hope that they do have everybody fit and ready to go, and that they will give Tyrone or give Kerry a really good game, because I think that's what, just look, as neutral fans, that's what you want. But when you look at Tyrone, and I've seen them play this year up in Fermanagh against Donegal, and you mentioned the physicality there, but what for me was the most striking thing that day was their bench and how they decided to utilise it. They did have a lot of their best players on the bench and then brought them on when the game was in the melting pot, like the McShanes and the McKennas. Do you think that they're going to do the same again?
Yeah, I think, look, that's another interesting one. Look, we don't know who had COVID, who didn't, and provided Colin McShane didn't have COVID, he will be after a nice bit of training in the meantime. He will be getting that bit fitter, that bit sharper. And if he's in training for all this time, he's been fit and healthy, I'd expect him to start. So that's another thing. Look, I suppose the hard thing at the moment is, look, the best thing coming into this is that we're going to have a semi-final. We're going to have two very strong teams, and we do look for a good game. But it's kind of hard to call from a Tyrone point of view who's going to start, who isn't, because like that, none of us really know who was sick and how sick they were. But I think if the likes of McShane and McKinnon, these fellas are fit, they're starting. They're starting with their best foot forward. The thing for me is, and Tyrone had been one of my favourite teams to watch this year, there's a new style of play. In the Ulster final, they were so direct, kicking into space, and the forwards were just caught and wrecked. They were, I don't think they hardly missed in the first half. They were outstanding, and it was just something we hadn't seen from Tyrone in a long time. My thing is, I think they're going to have, like I've said over the last couple of weeks, that they're the only team I know over throughout the years that could play two games in one match, that different periods in the game, I think they will just go to nullify Kerry. They will go to frustrate them. They have a lot of pace in the team, and then they will break. And I think that's going to be something for Kerry that they're going to have to be wary of. They're going to have to show a bit of maturity and a bit of patience, because for the first 10 or 15 minutes, and that's all it was in the Cork game, where they didn't show it, they looked in a bit of trouble. They were trying to force goals and stuff like that. Now they overcame that and Cork wilted or whatever, so there wasn't much of a game. But for the first 10 or 15 minutes, they looked impatient. They looked like they went to the kill off the game straight away. So Kerry haven't played in a while, so I think it's going to be a case of, look, this is going to go down to the wire, be patient and just keep the scoreboard tipping over.
One thing that will be very positive from a Kerry point of view is the fact that they definitely know they're not reliant on David Clifford anymore. They can rack up massive scores like they did against Cork for 22, and he doesn't need to feature as heavily as he had in the past. Do you think that Tyrone have enough players to look at those, that Kerry forward unit, and try and nullify them?
Personally, Dennis, is being honest, I don't think any team in the country has enough quality defenders to curtail all the Kerry forwards. Like, you talk about David Clifford and his brother Paddy, he's been outstanding this year. Sean Jay is one, for me, has been player of the season so far. And the likes of Stephen O'Brien's hardly getting a mention these days. Paul Gainey has been quietly effective. So that's just five players there, top of my head. I just think Kerry are lucky at the moment that if one fella is not through the lights, or he's not playing well, it's not his day, somebody else just stands up. I've no doubt that if David stands up the next day, or if he's having an off day, Sean, he'll stand up, or whoever it is. And like that, we tend to forget about the fellas who've been there for a while. Stephen O'Brien on his day is one of the hardest fellas in football to stop. He's just so direct, he's so strong. And Paul Gainey is just one of the sharpest shooters in the game as well. So personally, I think it will be a case of, I think Kerry's attack will have enough for the Tyrone defence. But it'll be a question on the other side, has the Kerry defence got enough for the Tyrone attack? Because it will be a case of who's more clinical on the day, I feel.
OK, well, call it for us then, Darren.
I think Kerry by seven.
Oh, seven. Right. Well, Alan Cawley did predict
that. I was going to
say
nine.
Alan Cawley did predict that Mayo would beat Dublin. So, Al, go on, since you're getting things right.
I think Kerry will beat them, but I don't know about seven. I'd say Tyrone will be a lot higher than that.
Okay, Darren O'Sullivan, thank you so much. And thank you as well for your Ronaldo contributions. I hope it all goes as well as you hope for. We're going to take a very quick break, and then it's rugby.
Game on 2FM.
Now, this weekend sees televised Interpros in women's rugby on TG Cahir as Connacht take on Leinster tomorrow and Ulster welcome Munster on Sunday. Earlier in the week, I caught up with Ireland and Munster rugby captain Ciara Griffin. The Irish team are bound for Italy next month for the rescheduled qualifying tournament for the Rugby World Cup, and that's where we begun.
Game on, rugby.
I know it's disappointing not to automatically qualify for the Rugby World Cup, but you still have a chance now with this, I suppose, a mini tournament. Can you just tell us a bit about what you need to do now to secure a spot in the Women's World Cup next summer?
Yes. So it's this is the European Repechage World Cup qualification. It's ourselves, Italy, Spain, Scotland, and we have to win all our matches. Simple as that. Win all our matches and you qualify for a World Cup. So it's a nice little prize at the end of it, really. And that's our target, and it's a good target to have. You know, you go to play every game to win. And it's nearly like cup rugby, if that makes sense. Nearly every game is like a cup match, so it's a high stakes.
Just in terms of the broader picture then as well, look, I think it's very easy probably just to focus on the negative side of things and the fact that everything was cancelled and that the women's game was affected an awful lot more than the men's game, and that, you know, not just the elite players but for rugby players all around the country, there wasn't that much rugby being played at all and it was hard.
But in the last few weeks, I feel there has been a little bit of positivity, and that probably comes in the form of the fact that the Interpros are going to be shown on television. It might only feel like a small thing, but I think for someone that has been following the progress of women's sport and women's rugby for a long time, it's actually a huge thing that this is happening, and it's going to be in conjunction with TG Cahir and BBC Northern Ireland as well. And also the emergence of a lot of the programmes like the Give It A Try and just trying to get young girls out playing, because without that, I just can't see the women's game getting to where it needs to go without getting those girls interested, the next generation, so that they can go on and follow in your footsteps. And I think television coverage combined with programmes that encourage young girls to get out and try the game will really make a difference.
Yeah, completely. And like, performance comes from grassroots. You know, it has to come. You can't just, you don't magically get a, you know, a senior team. Once you play young, you learn, like I'm using the skills now that I learned under 14s, you know, my first time. And that's how important it is that you learn the basics at a young age, at a grassroots level, because that's going to help you all the way up through your adult life in terms of playing. And on the flip side, in terms of Interpro, like, it's fantastic. Like, it's, we all love Interpro. You know, it, like, playing for your province is, it's your first taste of representation of rugby generally. And it's just fantastic because you've grown up in that province, you've grown up watching that province, wanting to play for that province. And the fact now that you get to watch it on TV is class. And it just makes it that bit more accessible for young girls, like you said. And especially in COVID times, I know things are opening up a bit, but you know, people are still anxious with it. It's still in our community, and that's, you know, that's fine. Everyone is hyper aware, but it gives people who can go the opportunity to see it as well.
Game on, rugby. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. As we all know, it was a very busy day in the world of sport. It was also a busy day in the world of the Paralympics as well. And to round up all of the action in Tokyo is Siobhan Madigan.
Huge disappointment for Ronan Grimes, who just missed out on a bronze medal in the 4,000-metre individual pursuit at Cycling's Velodrome this morning. The Athenry man led his bronze medal race until the final 250 metres, only to lose out on the medal to Diego Dunas from Colombia. Dunas also took bronze in this event at the Games back in Rio. However, with no velodrome as yet in Ireland, it puts Ronan's achievements into context today. He will no doubt now look to build towards Paris in just 3 years' time.
It's never nice coming fourth in a write-off for a medal, but it's not much more I could have done with it. Like, we saw how the qualifiers went, and Diego, the Colombian, he normally starts kind of slow, picks the speed up during the race, so we were hoping to start a bit quicker and hopefully try and get a draft, you know, and because I have, like, the last couple of laps, you know, there was a drop-off of mine in the qualifier, and we were hoping if I could get, you know, a couple of seconds up early, I might start to get a bit of a draft off him and hold off that climb towards the end. But it was a tight race, and I think it was up until the last two laps when it slipped away from me.
Rochelle Timothy finished 10th in the 500-metre time trial sprint final with another personal best time. In the pool once again today was teenage sensation Roisin Nguyen, and yet again she qualified for a final, posting another heat personal best. It's three finals in 3 days now for the Limerick schoolgirl. Tonight she placed 5th in 4 minutes 44.09 in the 400 freestyle. Our first athlete on the track was our European champion, Greta Srimakite, who went in the heat of the T13 women's 1500 metres this evening. She has safely secured passage through to tomorrow night's final, finishing 2nd in a time of 4 minutes 45.98 seconds. In table tennis, Colin Judge bowed out of the games following a 3-1 defeat to a Russian opponent in the round of 16, having fallen 2 sets to love behind. He battled back by winning the third, but could do little in the fourth as his more experienced Russian opponent closed out victory. Kerry Leonard is Ireland's first ever female archery competitor and scored a season best 6.57 this morning to rank 18th of the 24 competitors heading into the next phase of their competition. And it was another difficult day for our equestrian athletes in the Grade 1 and 3 para dressage events. Michael Murphy and Clever Boy scored 61.429% for their performance, while Kate Hare-Horan and Serafina T scored 66.470% in their Grade 3 contest this evening. Neither, though, managed to make the freestyle finals, but both will return for the team competition over the course of the weekend.
Now, Siobhan Madigan there in Tokyo for us. And to mark our racing card this weekend, here's Jane Mangan.
Game on racing.
Yes, Marie, by our general standards, this isn't a busy weekend on the racing front. That said, in the US, they're having one of the biggest weekends of their entire season. Travers Weekend in Saratoga is one of the biggest race meetings in New York. Travers Stakes itself looks to be dominated between Essential Quality and Midnight Bourbon. But I am glad to say that Ireland will be represented at the meeting, as Aidan O'Brien will be hoping Japan can rule America in the Sword Dancer Stakes tomorrow night at 10:25 p.m. There's seven runners in this race, and Japan has been a very classy horse in his day. Lest we forget, he won a Judmont International, but it's been a while since he's been competitive at the highest level, and he's going to have to be back to somewhere near his best if he's going to beat the former reigning champion Channel Maker for Bill Mott. But he is travelling to America. Maybe that style of racing will suit him. And good ground is very important to that horse. So I think Saratoga might just play to his strengths. In the UK, closer to home, the Celebration Mile is the feature race across the weekend in the UK. That takes place at Goodwood tomorrow. And it has a couple of horses in here on a retrieval mission. Chindit, whom I fancied for a Newmarket 2000 Guineas. He's been running in Group 1 level, but just has been lacking that spark. And I think down to Group 2, this might give him a chance to get his life or his career back on track. But he'll have to beat Ben Battle and Muta Sabek. Ben Battle, being a battle-hardened horse, has been around a long time for Godolphin. He's won an awful lot of money, and he is the class act of the race. So if Richard Hannon's three-year-old is going to win, he's going to have to overcome Ben Battle. On the home front, we have a very well-deserved day off on Sunday. There is domestic action at Navan tomorrow, but on Sunday it is a blank weekend for people to recharge their batteries ahead of some big autumn assignments. And I think it'll just give us a chance to take stock at how the season is panning out as it is. As it stands, we await further news as to how many people can attend Irish Champions Weekend. And I'm sure when those numbers come true and the information emerges, we will have much more food for thought. But till then, we are going to take a little breather and prepare ourselves for the autumn.
Game on racing.
Now a little bit of good news for the racing industry. The government are considering easing restrictions, which would come at a really good time for them with some busy weekends ahead. Alan Cawley, I was in Tallaght Stadium on my night off for the Shamrock Rovers Flora Tallinn game. I think a lot of people had high hopes heading into that game, but I think that really, I suppose, after the 4-2 loss in the first leg, it was probably, as I said, hoping rather than anything else.
Yeah, it was a mountain they gave themselves to climb after the first leg, and I think that's where they lost it. We mentioned it here last week in terms of their approach, and I just felt they were really naive, considering, I suppose, the level of game, the level of opposition, and also what was at stake. They were just so loose in the first leg, I couldn't believe it. And I suppose if you contrast that to Flora Tallinn last night, now I know they were protecting a 2-goal lead, but you look at how organised and disciplined they were in their away performance, and they were happy then to maybe catch Shamrock Rovers on the break, which is where they got the goal from. But I just felt last week, had Shamrock Rovers been something similar like that, and then obviously taking them back to Tallaght and then had a right go at them, I felt they would have been far better served. So last night, they had to score 3 to go through, 2 just to get back into the game. And once the goal went in, the first half they played quite well. I watched it, they played quite well, to be fair. At half time you're thinking they're well in the game. But once they conceded the goal, and it was the manner in which they conceded as well, obviously the goalkeeper making a mistake, Mandra giving the ball away, the whole thing went flat after that. And obviously you were in the stadium, so I'm sure you could sense then that probably people who were at the match felt it was all over at that stage.
Yeah, it really did. And look, it was disappointing. It would have been nice to see them progress to the Europa League group stages, but they do have a massive cup game against Bowes on Sunday, so they're going to have to lift themselves for that.
They'll have to lift themselves because they're probably playing the form team in the league. As we all know, Bohemians have had a great summer themselves, and Bohemians will be certainly eyeing up this competition as a realistic target of winning a trophy. Because I think, to be fair to Keith Long, for all the plaudits that we've given him over the last 3, 4, 5 years, I just think they might need to win a trophy as well, just to kind of rubber stamp that good form and progress that they've made. Now, albeit he's had to lose his best players and bring them in, so he's done a brilliant job, but I definitely think they have the potential to go on and win the cup. Whoever wins this on Sunday will go into favouritism straight away, Marie, because that's how strong both clubs are. I think it's going to be a brilliant game. I'm heading along to Dalymount. Some people are still give me stick over the fact that I drew them out at this stage of the competition. But if you're going to win it, you're going to probably have to beat one of these teams at some stage. So why not in this early stage? And I'm really looking forward to it. And I think Bowes just might edge it.
OK, well, we will have the draw for the quarterfinals on Tuesday evening on Game On. Alan Colley, that's all we have time for. Any big plans for the weekend besides sitting down watching Sky Sports News, waiting to see when Ronaldo will turn up?
It's going to be incredible. And knowing him, he'll probably want to play straight. I wonder, can he play or what this? What
yeah,
the
I
story
think they
is.
Said it was subject to visa and agreeing personal terms, so that takes a bit of time, especially with Brexit now.
But it's some news. Yeah, it's when I woke up this morning, I certainly didn't think we'd be talking about Cristiano Ronaldo going back playing for Man United. So it's absolutely incredible, Marie.
Right, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you digging out that old United jersey from when you were a kid. I don't know if it'll fit, but sure,
the cans and that one I had, the king,
give it a good lash now.
Game On 2FM.